This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour three rolling along this morning. Glad you're with us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is our Ron with two N's. NFL draft wrapping up over the weekend. Tennessee quarterback Hendon Hooker was drafted by the Detroit Lions, and he's got some good news because the Lions general manager just wants him to develop and get better. He came off a torn ACL. He is a fantastic passer, but he is going to be a quarterback that is going to need time because the injury was pretty severe. It's pretty much what cost Tennessee a national championship appearance. He got hurt in the game against South Carolina. South Carolina was beating him anyway, but then after that, Tennessee was quite, you know, they not necessarily quite the same, but they could have competed. They had beaten South Carolina. They could have competed for a national championship in a season in which they beat Alabama. But the injury was pretty severe. He's going to go to the Detroit Lions, get better and work, and you'll be the quarterback of the future. The other quarterback that people had eyes on from the SEC was Will Levis. And the Tennessee Titans moved up in the second round to get him. And it's created a situation with the Titans now where they have Ryan Tannehill still. Malik Willis was the guy they drafted last year, and now they've got Will Levis. Now, there's an old saying in football, as many of you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. Well, what if you have three? Does that mean you have everything? Does that mean do you have less than zero? What do you have when you have three quarterbacks on your roster that you want to find out something about, right? Ryan Tannehill wasn't going to last forever. Malik Willis was supposed to be the future, and now Will Levis is now the future, and Malik Willis's time, well, never really got rolling along enough. They saw enough that I think when Josh Dobbs came in, they liked him, but now it's Will Levis's turn? I don't know. By the way, what does Will Levis's stock, and we have this guy every year, don't we? Whether it doesn't have to be a quarterback. It can be in any position. That seems to get a lot of early run. His stock goes up and down. But in the end, he finds himself in round two. Now, a lot of times it's quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
What was it? Jimmy Clausen, I think, was the quarterback.
Jimmy Clausen. Remember him?
It's usually quarterbacks because they're more high profile. But every now and then we get a player, like a good defensive player, we're like, wow, nobody took him. Wow, he's going in the second round. Does that make us trust this process, or do we feel manipulated by the manipulation that is done by teams trying to out-manipulate each other with verbiage?
Well, I think where Will Levis, the main difference is that all of a sudden, there was a period of time, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that he was the number one overall pick.
Yeah. I mean, they were buzzing about his stock rising up.
And I think that's kind of the weird one is that, you know, we saw him as the number one or rumored to be the number one overall pick. We kind of knew. Nah, you're not going to be the number one overall pick, but you're probably going first round.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's a lot
of
teams.
Brady Quinn and Aaron Rodgers eventually did get drafted in the first round, right? I mean, there was a feeling what was it? Geno Smith was one that got drafted like the first thing off the board in the first round. Remember, he was a guy out of West Virginia that was supposed to go in round one.
Yeah.
And he was a 32nd pick
Jalen Hurts. Wasn't Jalen Hurts the same way?
He was
a second round pick, too.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of people saw him as a first-round talent. I mean, you know, the things that he had done at Alabama, at Oklahoma.
So this process is very fun because if I went up to people and I said, give me the draft guru you trust 100%, I don't know if people would say, well, 100%, I don't know about that. Because it's so hit or miss, and you don't ever lose your credibility, it seems, when you miss on players.
Yeah.
Like, you can, if Will Levis is a bust, complete bust, no one is going to look at Mel Kiper and go, what were you thinking? They never seem to get any fallback. I mean, he was on TV on that Thursday night wondering where the hell Will Levis was going to go. Right now we know that the Titans move up in the second round to get him. But let's say Levis plays. He's not that great. He comes and goes. He bounces around. Does anybody ever go to? No, because Mel Kiper's got 100 of these. I mean, he's got so many of these over 40 years because it is a hit and miss industry. I go back to Jamarcus Russell. When Jamarcus Russell went number one, there were people who didn't like it and there were people who did like it. Right. And then when he flamed out completely busted out, the people who said that, who said, oh, this guy, I don't know what the Raiders were thinking. This guy's a bust. They celebrated that. And those who thought he would be the next big thing, they disappeared. But the reality of it is I could take him and I could flip it around on anybody who was celebrating that pick as a success to their process. I could find a whole bunch. So you take your shots when you take them, but nobody seems to remember.
Has there been one where the guy, people were like, oh my God, that was a terrible choice.
Right.
And, you know, it was like borderline Hall of Famer.
I blame Todd McShay for that, or he was great and Todd McShay didn't see it, or Mel Kiper didn't see it.
I guess the most recent one would be Daniel Jones, right?
No. I'm with you on that one. No, I agree with that one. That seemed to be people going, oh.
That's a reach. Could have got him in the second round. Could have got him in the third round. But, you know, just saying things like that. And, you know, yeah, it was slow to start, but he looked pretty good last year.
Yeah.
And who knows if there's more to come now because of that. But that's one I feel like, I think most recently, I think that's the one where everyone was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he made that pick.
And by the way, I don't care where you live, if you're a fan of a team, an NFL team, and a rival college player is on your team, don't be mad at that. Right? Like if you're a Tennessee Vols fan and they draft Will Levis and you're like, ugh, grow out. And you're a Titans fan too, stop it.
No, the only thing I didn't like
push
about
that aside and go, it's all done now.
Yeah.
He's now a professional athlete.
Doesn't matter what school they go
to. Doesn't matter what school he went to.
I was happy that he got selected. I was glad that a team actually moved up for him just because I did feel bad for him sitting in that green room over and over again. But I knew that as soon as he gets drafted, he's an instant millionaire. So I'm not going to feel too bad.
He was home when he was picked.
Oh, yeah.
That must have meant that the next day they decided to go back home.
They said, forget this.
We're out of here.
They're not going to go show up on stage they don't even go up on stage, right?
No.
In the second round?
They just went.
That's done.
It. I'm surprised he didn't go, well, he's sitting in his hotel room in Kansas City waiting on his flight, waiting for his flight to leave. Will Levis found out he's with the two-tone blue.
Probably left the next morning. But I don't understand I'm not sure if Tennessee was the right pick or the right fit. Because it seems like now, I know Tannehill's on his way out. That's a given. But, I mean, to me, this feels like they've just given up on Malik Willis.
I think they did. I think they have.
That it's just, you know what? I mean, and he's just someone who's just going to disappear into the background, fade away.
You know
away.
What? Quarterbacks are so tough. Quarterbacks are tough because, I think I've said this on the show before, where that line, you know, if you meet the person you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with, you want the rest of your life to start right now?
Yeah.
That is apropos with quarterbacks.
Yes, it is.
Does not matter. Like, if you have a guy... If you really feel like you're in flux and you're waiting on the development of player A and player B is available in the draft and deep down you know player B has more upside, then you get player B. And then you got to look at player A and say, sorry, we didn't give you all the opportunities that you may have expected from us, but this is the way this business works. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you draft a quarterback if you've got, if you've got Jalen Hurts, right? You don't do that. Because you've already said, player A, my quarterback that I'm paying $51 million a year, is going to be better than anybody we're drafting. But
like
if you've got Malik Willis.
Like Max Dugan or Doug. Yeah, is it Dugan or Duggan?
Duggan.
I always want to say Dugan because you remember the movie, Max Dugan Returns.
Right. He's likely to be a low-cost backup for the Chargers.
For a long, long time.
Yeah, you don't have to pay a veteran $2 to $3 million to hold a clipboard.
Yep.
Because that's what they get as they have more service time. You could you pay a guy $2-3 million to be a backup.
Yeah, and he's starting his coaching vocational school.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because he'll see the field when it's mop up duty. That's about it.
But in the Titans' case, they went, look, Malik, we just like this. We like everything about this guy. He checks off a lot more boxes than you.
Yeah.
And we're not passing up on it. Like we are not going to. We can't put all our eggs in your basket, man. It's just that's not how this business works.
Yeah, we'll introduce them to actual cream to be put in the coffee instead of mayonnaise, but, you know, that's a work in progress.
I mean, you weren't a first-round pick. You were. Yeah. You know, we picked you third, and this guy, he was available, and we went and got him.
But I do like the picks of the Lions taking Hendon Hooker.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I think that's a good developmental pick. And I did like the pick of the Rams taking Stetson Bennett.
I like that, too.
You know, like because we know Matt Stafford's on his way out. I don't know if Stetson Bennett can play, but you know what? He was told he couldn't play college.
But here's the thing, right? No, and but what happens is these guys get put in situations where they're with good organizations, right?
Yeah.
Like, and look, I know the Rams, they put all their chips in the center of the table. They got rid of all sorts of draft picks so they could win a Super Bowl. And right now they're breaking all that down. I get it. But you like to think that Stetson Bennett, by the time he does want to, like, if he just continues in the system and they like him, that eventually when he plays, he'll be on a better Rams team. Like Sean McVay is a very good coach. And they'll start all over again putting players around him. Right? And Hendon Hooker's in the same spot. Hendon Hooker went to a team that is like a rocket ship flying high right now.
Yes.
I mean, again, it could be fleeting. It could be. But they were the hottest team to close out the season of anybody that did not make the playoffs last year. And they should have made the playoffs. I wish they had made the playoffs. They were playing that good. And I think there was a in the Seattle game, it was a messed up call by the officials. But they are solidly coached by Dan Campbell, solid players on that team, recognizing who they are, playing tough. He's on a team where the general manager said, chill, get better, get healthy, get stronger. We got this until you're ready to see what you can do. Good position to be in. Good position to be in forever. Will Levis, though? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
we'll
about
see.
That one.
I don't know about that one. We'll see. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, two NBA playoff games tonight. A opening series between the Celtics and the Sixers. And then you got Phoenix and Denver, game two. Suns trying to tie the series up at one after the Nuggets took game one on Saturday. And I think, I love the Western Conference the way it's set up. I think the LeBron, Steph Curry angle in the Golden State Lakers series is great. But I also think Denver and Phoenix as 1-4 and doing it the way 1-4 teams should do it, win your series in five games, sets up for really good conference semifinals. So, you know, I told you on Sunday morning I woke up to watch a rather boring Formula One race out of Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
So, I debated this, whether I should get up early or just tape it and watch it later, but I like the live interaction on Twitter and whatnot. And I this is how geeky I am. I subscribe to F1 TV that allows you to watch in real time data and whatnot. So as the race is going on, you can see timings, you can see distance intervals, you can see where the cars are on the track, who's pitted, what they've pitted for, whatnot. But it was boring, 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 boring. I was doing other things. It wasn't really that intriguing. But there was something very interesting at the end of the race. So Formula One has this rule that every car has to pit at least once. You have to change to a different compound tire at least once. So a lot of times with certain races, teams that start in the back of the pack, they will take their car as far as they possibly can go, as far as they can go. And they'll move up as everybody's pitting throughout the race. They'll move up the order and they'll get in the top 10. And what they're hoping for is that there will be an accident that will bring out a safety car and it will freeze their position and allows them to change tires under the safety car. And then, voila, they get to keep their top 10 position. It's a strategy that some teams use. But when we get to the end of the race, when we get to an end of a race, teams go, all right, you know, it doesn't look like that safety car is coming out. Get in, get your tires, and get back out there. We tried. You know, we're not going to finish in the top 10, but we tried. So as this race was slowly coming to an end, it started coming to an end, the leader was on his last lap. And as he was going around last lap, they decided to bring all the reporters and the photographers and the officials on to pit road because they're going to have what they call parc fermé, which is basically setting up for the after race ceremonies and stuff. So they start bringing people onto pit road. And the pit reporter who's covering the race is screaming on the television. He's screaming. What are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing? Nobody knows. He's got to pit because they had one driver that still hadn't pitted yet. And he was on his he needed to pit to qualify for the race. So he's going, there's a whole bunch of people down here. There's a whole bunch of people down here. He can't see them. And the driver is coming down a stretch where he's going over 200 miles an hour. And when he gets to pit lane, when he comes out of the pit lane, he's slowing the car down. But as he's slowing the car down, he's still going really fast. Like even on pit road, they're not going 20 miles an hour. He comes around the corner and it's an ocean of people scrambling to get off the pit, off the lane. And he had to slam on his brakes. He would have plowed into 15 to 20 people if he didn't move. Momentum alone would have just carried him in to a pile of people. It was the most scariest thing I've seen in a while. I kept going, oh no, oh no. And then they flashed to the scene where there was a bunch of people. And you just know this car is coming. And he's going to go around a corner. And he doesn't know that there are people there as he's coming in. And I guess his team was trying to tell him that. And he just turned around the corner and stopped. Nobody got hurt. Nothing happened. But it was, that was the most exciting thing of an hour and a half that morning, was wanting to know how many people would have gotten plowed over by an F1 car for being stupid enough to go onto the track, onto the pit lane, knowing a guy was pitting left. That was my Sunday
morning. I'm trying to find the video of it.
You should.
I'm looking at a steel photograph, though.
Yeah, the photograph's good.
It's a blind turn.
It's a total blind turn. He's coming down.
When you're coming around pit road,
you can't.
I mean, there's walls on each side. You can't really see what's going on. And then he just turns the corner. And I know what you're talking about. I mean, he's probably doing at least what at that point 70.
Oh, depending on his he's going down to about 70. Yeah, he's going from over 200. And then as he's moving over, he starts decreasing. But again, it's he's not finishing the top 10. He's gonna change the tires and then finish it up. But he's also, they're trying to get in and out as quickly as they can. So he's going to try to be quick within the limits of the speed limit, which is still pretty high. I mean, they go still pretty quick. And nobody told these people. It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy.
Now, were they thinking the race was over?
That's funny. They're doing an investigation into that. And I think we're going to have more information about it later today. But it was miscommunication. Somebody must have assumed everybody had pitted and this was just the last lap and everybody's running it. And nobody realized. Because it's very rare that guys will do this because there's not a lot of circuits where you could take a tire all the way through to the near end of the race. Normally they wear out much earlier than that. But this is particular track. You can get on a harder tire and ride it all the way through, and then you pit mandatorily rather than because you need to. So nobody told him. But that would have been major news if 20 people were sent to the hospital and like three or four died because a Formula One car blasted into them at 80-something miles an hour. That would create just so very, very scary. But nevertheless, that was the only thing that woke me up on Sunday. That was rather boring. But I'm very glad the sports day yesterday was really compelling. Really, 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 really compelling. From the NBA games into the NHL games. And listen, like I said earlier, I'm not the biggest hockey fan in the world, but is there anything more nerve-wracking than a tight game 7 in hockey? It's for a sport that is always kind of going, respect us, respect us, respect. There's nothing more than you can present a fan than a game 7 and the nerves attached to it. You can't breathe. I don't have a dog in any of the fights other than Avalanche I'm a little more attached to. But holy cow, is that nerve-wracking. Especially the Bruins. If I was the goaltender for the Boston Bruins in overtime last night, they would have scored 5 seconds into the game. I would have been a nervous pile of wreck. I wouldn't be able to see, Ron, the puck from the vomit that would have been filled in my mask at the start of overtime in game 7 last night.
Yeah.
I'd be in the crease with my stick, puking into the mask because I would have been so nervous that I'm about ready to cost us a 135-point season in overtime. You can blame it. Look, listen, you can blame the defense, right? You can say, like, the forechecking was, like, who? Everybody just blames the goaltender regardless of circumstance, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, no matter what. It's like a quarterback that puts up 37 points in a game and they lose, and they go, why didn't you put up 39 that apparently you needed?
I saw a great tweet. I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do. I doubt it. A guy had posted, like, you know what, hey, why don't they ever just put a sumo wrestler as a goalie?
Yeah, why not? Why? When, you know what's funny? Whenever I see a guy go, what a save! And he gets to go from one corner of the post to the other. Why is that necessary if you have a 600-pound sumo wrestler in net?
Is that not allowed? Or...
Why wouldn't you just go, why not?
I mean,
can you imagine that?
You won't be able to score.
Oh goodness.
No, I mean, get it, like, you know, in soccer, yeah, obviously I get why you wouldn't have that. I mean, you know, he's not agile enough.
He's not 3,000 pounds.
Right.
He's not 8 feet, 3,000 pounds.
If you get a good sumo wrestler where, you know, it's all I mean, they're very muscular, but he's like 500 pounds.
That's great.
Why not throw some pads on him and see what happens? Like, you know, all of a sudden you just say, yeah, you're not really going to have to move too much. Just let this puck hit you.
Oh, God.
But, so, you know, you created these tiny little holes that they got to slip a puck through.
So nerve-wracking to be in that net. Just
I know, overtime hockey, it's an addiction.
It's crazy. Like, even last night, Avalanche Kraken. Seattle's up 2-1 going into the third. And if you're Grigoriev, the goalie for Colorado, you're like, please, 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 just can you please? I need two goals to be comfortable here. I need you to tie the game, and I need you to give me a one-goal lead.
Just in case.
Where me coughing one up isn't going to kill us. But the Avalanche couldn't do that.
Nah.
So now they're out. So now Seattle, second year in existence, have advanced. So. Celtics and Sixers tonight, game one of the NBA playoffs. These are deep, deep rivals. It goes back to when Philadelphia was the Nationals back in the day. They go back to Russell Chamberlain. It goes back to Dr. J, Larry Bird. It goes back to Allen Iverson the Celtics had a relevancy period for about 20 years. But nevertheless, they've met many, 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 many times in the playoffs. And this is yet another edition of that rivalry. That's game one tonight. And, of course, the Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets, your top 1-4 team. And now the top four, the top two teams, because the other conference finals is...
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, HBCU schools. We're not well represented in the draft, according to Deion Sanders, where only one player was taken, and he was very embarrassed for the NFL that they did that. Do you think that argument carries, one, any weight, or two, coming from the person that left one of those schools to get the bigger bucks at Colorado, should he be listened to in that level of criticism?
I think both. I mean, you know, I'll make the argument this way, right? And I know they're not equivalent, but how many D2 kids were selected?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
How many D3 kids were selected? I mean, I'm not saying that they're on the same level, but when you look at which schools these kids were coming from, I mean, you know, even Division I kids, a lot of these smaller Division I schools, they had no kids selected.
If you are talking about when we talk about the NFL and we talk about its discrepancy of black head coaches in this league, that is a legitimate argument.
Yes.
That is a legitimate complaint. That is a legitimate argument. That is to see Steve Wilkes, for example, in Carolina, not get a job. Frank Reich is a Carolina Panther. I get it. He played there. He's very tight with people within the organization, and even the new owner had respect for Frank Reich.
Mm-hmm.
But that happens a lot in this league, where an interim coach takes over, he does a really good job, and then he does not get this job. But for Deion Sanders to sort of imply something about the NFL and the way it drafts his players, I think it has a very good track record of saying, we don't care where you go to school or who you are, if you're talented, you will get a spot in this league. You may not get drafted the way you want. You might not be a first round pick. You maybe thought you were a first or second, or you thought you were a second and you were a fourth. But I don't think they've turned away from the HBCU kids. If you were talented enough to be an NFL player, you would have been picked on those schools. I really don't think that there is something that is where that conference and the players in that conference, if you can shine in that conference and have an NFL skill, the NFL said they'll always, I mean, the NFL has shown they will take you. They will play you. But if this is why Deion Sanders, I mean, I think Deion Sanders has done more in terms of highlighting HBCU schools than anybody in terms of football level. I mean, we're talking about a conference that had Eddie Robinson as a longtime coach at Grambling. It had Jerry Rice as a player at Mississippi Valley State, right? It had Doug Williams. And but Deion Sanders, that brief period of time at Jackson State, highlighted a lot, right? I mean, he was in commercials with Nick Saban. I mean, he was in commercials with Nick Saban where the premise of the commercial were these were two equal people, that Coach Saban and Coach Prime were on the same level of excellence in those Aflac commercials, right? Because he's Deion Sanders. But he left to go to Colorado. And why did he leave to go to Colorado? Because he didn't enjoy HBCUs? He didn't enjoy the SWAC? No. He went there because there's only so much you can do in those conferences if you want to pursue a larger goal. You're only going to get so far. That's why Eddie Robinson is a legend, because he coached at Grambling and was at Grambling for a very, very long time. But other people have used that as a stepping point for other things. Deion Sanders, everyone knew when he got to Jackson State that if he was good at it, the clock was ticking. Everybody knew that. There wasn't one person who thought 10 years from now Deion Sanders would still be coaching at Jackson State. No. Do you know why? Because Deion Sanders is alert to the message of people saying, yes, but could he do it at USC? Could he do it at Washington? Could he do it at Florida State, his alma mater? Could he do it at Michigan State? Could he do it at, you know, like all these schools, could he do it somewhere else? And it just so happened that Colorado had a coach opening, and those two came together. So I agree with you. I think one, people who are upset at the hypocrisy have a right to be upset with the hypocrisy. But two, I just don't see evidence from the NFL that they don't take just talented people no matter where they come from. They made Carson Wentz the second pick in the draft, right? I mean, you can play at a Division II, 1A, 1AA level and still get drafted. You can play anywhere. Your value isn't where you played. It's how talented you are. Now, look, you can make the argument that there's something going on at Georgia that Howie Roseman seems to really like of what's going on in Athens. And you can see, and I'd love for somebody to sort of do a more deeper dive into this. Is Howie Roseman, for example, did he notice a character trait in the Georgia players that he's interviewed and seen, or is it just 100% talent? Right? Meaning, if any of those guys had played anywhere else, he still would have gotten them. Or did he notice that they all seem to be like this? They all learn something in Kirby Smart's system at Georgia that makes them really good NFL prospects. Like that natural talent, size, speed, all that stuff. But man, they are coming in better prepared for the NFL. There's something about what's going on in Athens. And maybe he's noticed that, right? We saw Georgia had 10 players drafted. Alabama had 10 players drafted. Yes, you get to the bigger stage, there is going to be a different level of dedication for you to get to the next level than if you are playing at Jackson State. Right? The resources are better at those schools, right? That's why they win the recruiting battles. Because if you're a young player and you are trying to get to the NFL, it is difficult to go there in an ocean of talent. It is difficult to go there unless you can spend 3 years within a program where you are a much different player after 3 years than you entered when you were coming out of high school. And when you go to Georgia, And there is a specialist for everything. Meaning, I want to get faster. I want to get stronger. I want to have better nutrition. I want to balance my sleep schedule. I want everything is available to you as a resource at these schools that have more invested into their programs. That's basically stating the obvious. But it doesn't mean if you're a talented player and you've chosen the route of going into the SWAC, for example, that you can't make it to the NFL. Of course you can make it to the NFL. Of course you don't need a warehouse, gigantic 20,000 square foot training facility where 200 people work on staff for your betterment. You can work out in a simple weight room. You can be a part of a program that doesn't compete for national championships. It's barely on TV. They'll find you if you're good enough. Believe me, that's what every single team in the NFL, that's why they employ them. It's not, they don't watch Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler discussing a game on Saturday night and go, well, I guess we'll be taking those. They send people to schools. They send people everywhere. These scouts have regions. And he knows that. He knows that. And here's the thing. I know Deion likes, you know, he everybody in Colorado loves Deion Sanders coming there. There's no question. But the more you
read. Well, not everybody.
Not everybody. Not everybody who got cut, right?
Not some former players.
But nobody, no administrator or fan or booster thinks this is a bad hire. But they're all saying the same thing, which is find the camera, you'll find Deion Sanders. He's filming all of this. He's putting it out on YouTube. He is filming the basic reality show of the first year of Deion in Division I, right? Which is fine. You know why it's fine? Because we're living in an era where that's how you get kids. That's how you're reaching kids, right? You're reaching young people through YouTube and TikTok and Reels and everything else. You are reaching them through a different level of social media that he now understands. So if he is giving a speech, and it's a rah-rah, feel-good, I mean business, and you're going to be great speech, is it better to wrap it up and put it in a documentary at the end of the season, or is it better to slap that thing on TikTok in 3 minutes? Right? Deion understands it. So he also knows when he tweets about his love for HBCU schools and also the fact, you know, the SWAC or anybody else, and he's speaking for those kids, he still wants to have a connection there. That's the only way he can have that connection. Because here's the thing. The perception is it's been severed. The perception is it's been cut. The perception is that Deion Sanders has moved on from that world. Right? The Deion Sanders now is gone to Boulder. He's now in the Pac-12. He's now on Pac-12 After Dark. He's now going to get national attention. ESPN's cameras are coming. They're filming him doing everything. There's 47,000 in the spring game. Has he left it behind? Did all of the things that he talked about the values of those schools and the importance of those schools, and from are they null and void now? He wants to remind you that in his world, that's not the case. But it didn't really come out well because the critics were slamming the hypocrisy. Really? You're going after the NFL? Because they felt like there wasn't enough NFL-level talent there? Well, why did you leave? And why did you bring everybody with you to Colorado? I can understand the disconnect between this tweet and the way people are viewing it.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, as we head down the stretch, thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call. A good Monday to you. Again, tomorrow we'll talk about the two games tonight and get you set even for more of the other two games in the NBA playoffs. So the NHL playoffs has no Tampa Bay Lightning, no Boston Bruins, no Colorado Avalanche. LA Kings are out. Edmonton is still alive. Toronto Maple Leafs are still alive. So Canada's still breathing.
Where are you going with this, Tony?
I'm going that they're still breathing. They're still breathing for the chance for that country to get the cup.
How remarkable would it be if it ended up being a Toronto or Edmonton team? hoisting the cup.
Oh, if I had a choice as an American with no dog in the fight, I would choose Toronto.
Yeah, because that's the most American Canadian city out there.
Right, and they haven't won the cup in forever and a day. So that's it. But the Maple Leafs got home ice advantage in this round. They could be in the conference finals. Maybe Florida, that was it. That's all they got. Maybe that was it. They're drawing they go, we gave it everything in the Bruins series. We don't have much left. You see that a lot, too. Actually, I brought that up with the Miami Heat against the Knicks. I said, look, maybe you might get a Miami Heat team that might win game one, but you might get a Miami Heat team that was like, yeah, well, we gave everything we got in the first series. We see what we got in the second series. They're emotionally drained, but no, that's not the case. They won. Seattle and Dallas. Oh, Dallas is still in. This is how little I'm paying attention to this. The Dallas Stars are still in this thing?
Seattle basically is a Canadian city in the United States.
Seattle and Dallas. Yeah, will they just come down to Seattle and grab the cup from them and take it to Vancouver?
Across the border?
Yeah, why not?
I think so.
Vegas and Carolina still in it as well. So there you go. Don't get me wrong. I love the idea of having some of the better teams upset, but it's like it is chaotic now that the Bruins and the Lightning and Avalanche are kind of out. It does feel a little bit more open. I thought the Avalanche were just sleeping in the series. I really did. They had a suspension of one of their top players for game five, but I thought they would just wake up and go, yeah, okay, let's get rid of this pesky team. This goes to show you how good, we talked about this before, how good at least the NHL is when they get an expansion team of going, hey, We'll load you up with some players. We got this draft here where you can only keep a certain amount, but we're not going to stick these teams with lousy, young players who aren't that talented. You got to give up something. And now it's made like the Vegas Golden Knights pretty strong right out of the gate. It made Seattle pretty strong right out of the gate. So good. That's good for the sport when you give a fan base that could have a honeymoon period, but then you've got to get to work. Right. I mean, if you are when Major League Baseball did this, the Tampa Bay Rays, for example, came in the same year as the Arizona Diamondbacks. Well, both teams weren't that great, but both teams went, let's get to work. And Arizona was in the World Series. They were in the playoffs, I think, the next year. And they won the World Series in 2001. We talk about Carolina and Jacksonville in the NFL. You are expanding, but you've got time to expand. So you got time to sort of figure this out. You putting the right people in place. Think about it this. When you're an expansion team and you get given the franchise, it's not until 3 or 4 years later that you kind of launch, right? Maybe three, yeah, where you've got a place to play now. You get a general manager. You're building your stadium. You're building your roster. So you have an idea of what you want to do, and that's all you're doing. You're not managing a draft. You're not managing free agents. The first couple of years is you mapping out a game plan. Right, coming up with what you want to do.
Yeah, so once in a while it's escalated. Like, the Browns were able to turn around very quickly because they had all the infrastructure already there.
Right, right.
But even that was it took at least a year?
It took a little bit, yeah. It's mm-hmm. not as much as other teams. But, like, I was telling my wife about this last night because we were chatting about, I said, if Nashville gets a baseball team, I said, it's going to be 3 or 4 years before it launches.
Yeah.
Right? It's not going to, if they announced it tomorrow, it'll be 2026. 2027 by the time they play, and it's like that, it takes a while. So when you're in those, when you are hired as the new G, you got like 3 years to plan out a game plan. Usually you get your coach too. He's not doing anything. You usually go, yeah, come on board. What do? You sit in the office all day and you find players you want. You have more time to analyze. Hey, when we get to the draft of us getting the teams, where the teams have to protect players, but then they don't protect. These are the kind of players we're looking for. These are the kind of players we want. Here's a roster, make it work. And by the way, since your fans are excited that you're in this thing to begin with, they don't care if you lose, 50 games in your first year. It's like, no, you can win because you've got some players that have found a new home somewhere and might get roles where they were chomping at the bit to get with their previous team, but couldn't. And now they get them. Maybe they're on the one line when they were on the three line, or in the NBA. Like, maybe they're starting when they weren't starting before. So congratulations to the Seattle Kraken. By the way, my wife even said, great logo. I go, isn't it?
Everything about them, they hit a home run.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
And a lot of times they miss on these type of things.
That's right. That's right.
But, so, I mean, from the logo to the name to the colors, I mean, everything everything fits perfectly with that area.
So, again, NBA tonight, Sixers and Celtics and Phoenix and Denver. And then Miami, New York is game two Tuesday night. Clippers and Lakers game one on Tuesday night.
No, Warriors.
Warriors. I'm sorry. Clippers. Did I say Clippers? What am I wrong with me? Lakers and Warriors game one. What's wrong with me? Why am I thinking Clippers? No one should ever think of the – no one should make a Freudian mistake with Clippers in it.
In the second round? What are you – come on.
That is a sin. You should mistake them for the Lakers. You should make the Lakers mistake when you're talking Clippers and you say Lakers.
Time.
That should happen all the time. If you're saying, oh, yeah, Steve Ballmer owns the Lakers. I mean the Clippers. Like, that's what you should do. You should never replace Clippers with anything. That's terrible on my part. God. I should put myself in sports purgatory for that for a day.
I think you just need to sit in a corner for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The Sixers-Celtics series is going to be no fun if Joel Embiid doesn't play. I'm sorry. No fun. He's the only reason they'll win a game or two.
Yeah, because I don't believe in Harden.
I don't believe that any of them can match up with the Celtics. I think the Celtics
gives you that chance.
Embiid at least gives you an opportunity to win that series, but without them, there's no chance they're winning that series. Here's the one thing I like about the second game tonight between Phoenix and Denver. One thing, Denver wins the first game, right? And they win by double digits. And they had a double-digit lead, and they kind of kept that double-digit lead, and they win 125-107. But I like the way almost every quote that's coming from the Phoenix Suns is, well, we didn't do this. We didn't do that. They did this, but we didn't do that. Like, Monty Williams is pointing out, going, yeah, you know what? Aaron Gordon is making shots, and this guy's making shots, and this guy's making shots. But we didn't do this defensively. We didn't throw a hand up. We didn't, we committed too many turnovers. I never worry about a team losing and how they lose a game one. Never, never. Said it many times. Memorial Day Massacre, Celtics-Lakers game one in 85. I never worry about how a team loses game one, ever. You can lose by 100. I couldn't care less. Lose by 70. I don't care. What I do care about is what you say about it and how you respond about it the next day, the next game. So in the Suns' case, lose 125-107. Couldn't care less. If you come back and you go, look, we were a little sluggish. We turned the ball over too much. Defense, we didn't get our hands up. And oh, by the way, they were making crazy shots in a game where I don't think they'll make those all series long. Then we'll see in game two how you come back. How you come back in game two. So that's why tonight, that's why this series could get interesting. If Denver's up 2-0, it's going to be hard for Phoenix to get back into it, but not impossible because, again, they got two games at home, and like we saw with Golden State, take care of those two games at home. Make it a best of three after that. You never know what will happen. But I don't care what the differential score is in a game one because sometimes, again, you just go, all right, we're out. Let's get out. Let's wrap this up. Let's get out. No fouls. No. We're not going to try to make a 22-point comeback in game one. Let's get out of here. Right, so losing by what, 18 points? In game one, whatever it was, 18 points? That's fine.
Yeah.
As long as you know the mistakes that you made and come back and fix those mistakes in game two.
And a lot of it was the refs.
Yeah, it could be the refs too.
It's always the refs. What are you talking
about?
It's always the refs.
But I will say, I think Monty Williams is right. I don't think the Nuggets are going to have that much scoring depth throughout this series. I don't think they're going to get
this is the one series where I think the two teams match up really well.
I do too. Yeah, I agree.
But it's also the one series that is probably going to get lost in the shuffle.
It's not a series that you can go back in the regular season, obviously, because of the Durant acquisition. And I think they played in the final regular season game of the series, and you don't care about that at all because it's like, I'm not giving you
seating.
Anything.
You already
knew it. You're all set. You just kind of go, eh, don't. There's no reason.
But there's no, like, for me, I just look at it, it's like there's no real storyline.
Yeah.
And it's going to be probably the best series out of the four, but there's no real storyline to grab onto.
Yep. It's going to be interesting tonight. I mean, the Nuggets had all five starters in double figures. I don't think you're going to see that. They have depth. Don't get me wrong. They have depth. That's their key. But, yeah, I agree with Monty Williams. Get some hands up. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. As we continue, the Lombardi Line is next on right here on Sports Map Radio Network.